Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. In the past few months, we've chatted with cellist Robert Cohen about what goes into creating and maintaining a high-level career in classical music. We've discussed choosing a cello and a bow, the challenges in transporting such a valuable instrument internationally, and what kind of preparation goes into each performance.
And while all of those things are personal to each musician, today we're going to talk about the more personal cost a performing career at this level can exact. Cohen says that following his passion while also having a healthy and happy home life requires a continual balancing act.
For me, it was just one path. And of course, that path includes lots of different things, but it's about making music, about playing music, being on the platform. And so by the time I got to the point where I met my wife, who is a musician, it was very clear for her, and it was absolutely clear for me, that this was not going to change, that my life needed to be about music and needed for me to be on the platform regularly. And in order to do that, I couldn't just live in one city and play in one city. I would have to tour. I would have to go where I was called, really, anywhere in the world, and absorb, as you know, we talked about, these problems you have of traveling and all the logistics. But just the knowledge that that was going to be my life. And by the time I met Rachel, I was doing that a lot. And she understood that very, very well. And as a violinist who was also just starting her career, she was touring with different orchestras, for instance. So I suppose we had initially the first difficulties, which was how to spend any time together.
Actually, to be together in the same place.
Yes. Yeah. And when you are really in love with somebody, the worst thing is not to be with them. And I have to say, we were just talking about this the other day, you know, how many years has it been? We've been married almost 28 years now. So it's still like that. We still are struggling to find enough time to be together. And when we started, actually, what happened is she was playing and touring, and we made a rule. We made a rule that we would not be apart for more than 2 weeks at a time. Because I'd seen a lot of my friends and colleagues in their relationships that very often didn't last. And it was based on not spending any time together, which is very understandable. You know, you're not going to work and coming back at the end of the day and seeing your husband or wife.
You have to work harder at being together.
You really do.
When you're both, particularly if you're both touring.
Yes. And when the decisions come, you know, when somebody says, would you like to go and do this tour? And then you're thinking, well, yes, of course, because I need to play. But that means that we're not going to see each other. So we made this rule, the two-week rule, which was that whatever happens, we would meet somewhere after 2 weeks. Because more than 2 weeks started to be a problem. This is our experience anyway, that thing as you go along each day, things happen. There are, of course, big things, which are, you know, maybe career, big career chances or things that happen, or what happened at a concert, or you met a very important person and this could lead to something. You know, the kind of things to do with building your future. And then there are the really little things, like you just happen to walk out and the sun caught that tree and it just, the colors were just so beautiful, and then you walked past and so on. And what we realized that when we had the chance to talk on the phone, you know, every now and again, we'd be cramming the big things in, you know, oh, this is dramatic things happened, or so-and-so's ill, or, you know, those big things. But we didn't have a chance to talk about the little things, which actually, for us, were the beautiful things in life. You know, big things are going to happen. You can't help them. But noticing things, or just wanting to say, oh, I just talked to somebody on the train today, and they were just so interesting, the way they talked about their life. And you want to say something about it. And we realized that if you don't speak very often and see each other very often, it's all those little occurrences that you don't get a chance to talk about. And life is about those things. It's not all about the huge, big things that happen. So we made this rule, and it was pretty difficult to manage, because sometimes we literally have to fly to somewhere that was a midway point between us and have a couple of days and then fly off in different directions again. Or I would have to come via home, or she would have to come via me or something. But we really stuck to it. And I think the only times, I would say maybe once a year, or perhaps twice a year, when there was some big tour, a 5-week, 6-week tour in Australia or somewhere that, you know, you can't fly 25 hours just to say hello.
Yeah.
And of course, these days you've got Skype and all these kind of things. But I have to say, they are really lovely in a way, but they're just not the same. And then, of course, we started to have children. We have 4 boys. Then, of course, Rachel was very much more, well, one of us had to be more homebound in a sense. And the decision we made was that Rachel would do that because her career was less volatile in a sense. If you stop as a soloist performing, you know, you're probably never going to get back into where you were. Whereas as an orchestral player, people would know that she was a good player and they invited her before and that she was having a family, and then quite possibly she could go back to that. So I was the one who's carrying on. She was the one who stayed more at home, although she did perform from home, as it were. She, for instance, was working with the Covent Garden Royal Opera House Orchestra, which is working in London, so she didn't have to tour. She didn't really accept any of the engagements that took her away out of the country like she'd done before. But then it was really up to me to get back. And like I'm sure it's the same for everybody, you know, when children are growing up and then there's, you know, I'm always accused of being the absent father and then all these things. And then it's a really tough, difficult decision about how long you're away and what you do. Well, I suppose one of the things I discovered was that you can come home, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're really home.
Yeah, you have to actually be there. I was just going to say, you really have to be present when you do come home, because otherwise you're just clocking in.
Exactly. And that's very difficult. I'm sure anybody who does the sort of thing I do or travels a lot will find that hard. I mean, that's another thing we kind of discovered, that there's a 24-hour kind of warming up period. You know, I've been away basically on my own, looking after myself, making sure that I eat, that I sleep, that I'm prepared for my concerts. But I'm basically making sure that I'm okay in order to be on top form on the platform. So when I come home, I'm suddenly not alone anymore. It's not about me anymore. It's about the family. And that takes 24 hours, I've discovered over these years. It's like a decompression chamber. I've got to stop thinking about myself all the time. And the same thing from their point of view. They're so used to me not being there that it takes time. So there are a lot of these things to deal with.
Well, that tension between needing to do what you're passionate about, but also needing to be a part of what you're also passionate about, your family,
Yes. And
trying to find that balance. Do you think it helped that Rachel is also a musician? Would this have been possible if she hadn't been?
Well, it's a very interesting question. There are so many things about the fact that she's a musician that seem to make sense. The fact that she understands what I'm trying to do musically probably better than anybody else in my life. But I think it's just her. I think she could be like that if she did something else. I just think that it just worked. I mean, we're just incredibly lucky to have this relationship. And I'm not sure that I can really pin it down to the fact that it's because she's a violinist. Because she has her musical views and her musical ways. And then not mine, but she understands me. But I think that's because she understands me, full stop. I can't, of course, I can't imagine it not being the way it is.
The thing that I was thinking about with her being a musician is she understands the drive that maybe somebody who wasn't a musician might not. That was all I was thinking
about.
Yeah,
no, I think, and of course that brings up some really interesting thoughts as well, because when you're living with somebody whose kind of lifeblood is to play music and to be on the platform and to communicate it, you know, you have to also deal with the fact that somebody has this other thing in their life that isn't you. And, of course, we do have an enormous love for each other. But she knows I also have an enormous love for music. So I think it's quite complicated. And you have to be quite tolerant. But I suppose, yes, when you live with somebody who has this massive passion for something other than you, it can't be that easy to swallow it all the time.
It's a certain kind of single-mindedness that I think, whether you're a musician, you know, a visual artist, an astrophysicist, it doesn't matter almost what it is. It's that, you know, it's almost that single point of focus that somebody who's really, really good at what they do has to have.
Absolutely.
You know? And what it's like, and I mean, there are lots of movies and books and things about couples where things went disastrously wrong because one person was driven and the other one couldn't take it.
Yes, you know? And we have to be careful not to fall into this kind of, you know, cliche of any sort, because I think every relationship is really very different. But just going back to my point earlier about the fact that when I practice, I'm a much happier person. You know, she knows that. Rachel knows that very well, and she will make sure that I practice in a way. She'll make sure there's space. Because actually what happens is that when I'm happier, more content with that side of things, I'm just easier to be with. And probably it's much nicer. Our relationship is much nicer at that moment because I don't have this devil thing going on in my mind that I really need to get something sorted in this second movement of the Dvorak, or, you know, there isn't that worry behind that, am I prepared enough for this concert or this recording? When I'm more content and I've fulfilled certain things, not just organizational, but also I've discovered something that I've been looking for in a piece of music, I think then I'm just a much better person to be with.
So it's self-preservation on her part.
I think there is definitely.
Yeah, she's thinking, okay, this will make my life much easier. Well, it's just one more piece of what I find fascinating in our conversations, uncovering what it's like to live and work at the level that you do. And I want to thank you for being so honest about that. That was terrific.
Thank you.
Lake Effect contributor Robert Cohen is an award-winning recording artist, conductor, artistic director, and the cellist for the Fine Arts Quartet. He spoke with us as part of our regular monthly segment called On That Note with Robert Cohen.